from heaven to shine.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
I feel like TikTok just put the gun in his hand and told him to pull the trigger.
How many more children have to die because Snapchat chooses profits over safety?
Can't Look Away, a new documentary that exposes the tragic consequences of social media addiction on young people, from sleep deprivation to suicide. We'll speak with the director and a lawyer from a center that represents over 4,000 children. But first, Planned Parenthood under attack. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week over whether South Carolina can cut off its funding. We'll speak with Planned Parenthood CEO Alexis McGill Johnson. Then to Washington State, where ICE agents pulled over the car of a beloved immigrant farm worker organizer, Alfredo Juarez, smashed his car window when he asked for a warrant and hauled him away. He picks strawberries for a living.
Just try your best. This is how they want it. Yeah, so usually you have your bucket, you throw it in, you grab another one, another little plant. Like right here, you grab this one, finish it, grab another one, and that's how you go.
Nice.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's killed at least 112 Palestinians over the past day, including dozens of children and elders, in three separate attacks on schools where hundreds of displaced families took shelter. In the deadliest of the day's massacres, 29 people were killed when four Israeli missiles struck the Dar al-Aqsa school in Gaza City. 18 children were among the dead, over 100 others wounded, with dozens believed to be trapped under the rubble. Separately, Israel bombed a water desalination plant east of Gaza City, its latest attack on civilian infrastructure. Meanwhile, Israel's ordered the forced expulsion of even more areas, this time from southern neighborhoods of Gaza City. Many of those affected have been displaced repeatedly over the last 18 months.
We haven't slept all of last night. It was a bloody night. We've placed roofs over us, but they flew away. We put up walls, but they fell on us. Where should we go? Where should we go, people? How long will we remain like this? How long will we keep evacuating and coming back every other day, evacuating, then coming back? Until when?
The United Nations says some 280,000 Palestinians have been newly displaced since Israel unilaterally ended the Gaza ceasefire in March. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights warns Israel's total blockade of Gaza, now in its second month, has once again created famine conditions for some 2 million Palestinians relying on food aid. The U.S. Senate has voted down a pair of resolutions introduced by Senator Bernie Sanders to block $8.8 billion in new arms sales to Israel. On Thursday, no Republicans and just 14 Democrats voted alongside Senator Sanders to restrict the sale of massive bombs and other military equipment.
In the last 2 weeks, they have intensified their assault against the Palestinian people. According to UNICEF, since Netanyahu broke the ceasefire, more than 1,000 people have been killed, including over 300 children, and more than 600 children have been wounded.
Among Democrats voting against limiting arms sales to Israel was New Jersey Democrat Cory Booker. His vote came just 2 days after he delivered a 25-hour speech on the Senate floor promising to resist President Trump's agenda. Stock markets continue to plummet as President Trump's sweeping global tariffs drew widespread condemnation and plans for countermeasures. China, which is now subject to a 54% tariff, just announced a retaliatory 34% tariff on U.S. goods starting April 10th and accused the U.S. of bullying. French President Emmanuel Macron called for unity among European leaders and for the suspension of investments in the U.S.
I think what's important, and that's all the work that must be done by the sector, that future investments or investments announced in recent weeks should be suspended until things are clarified with the United States. Because what message will it send to have big European players investing billions of euros in the American economy at a time when we're being hit? So we must show collective solidarity.
France is also urging Europe to tax U.S. tech companies as part of retaliatory strategy. Canada introduced a 25% tariff on U.S. cars and trucks. Here in the U.S., the automaker Stellantis said it's laying off 900 workers at five manufacturing plants after Trump's tariff plan was announced and temporarily pausing production at assembly plants in Mexico and in Canada. In Washington, D.C., a newly introduced Senate bill with bipartisan support would limit Trump's authority to impose tariffs without going through Congress. In a separate challenge to Trump's trade war, the new Civil Liberties Alliance sued to block tariffs on China, arguing Trump unlawfully invoked emergency powers to impose them. Several analysts have pointed out Trump's tariff plan appears to have been based on math calculated by AI chatbots. South Korea's highest court has unanimously voted to remove impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol 4 months after he tried and quickly failed to impose martial law.
By mobilizing the military and police to undermine the authority of constitutional institutions such as the National Assembly and violate the basic human rights of the people, he made a grave betrayal of the people's trust, who are the sovereign members of the Democratic Republic.
On the streets of Seoul, crowds broke out in cheers as the judgment was announced. Yoon's declaration of martial law on December 3rd triggered swift lawmaker action and massive public protest. South Korea's election commission will soon announce a date for a new election as Yoon's removal takes immediate effect. At least seven people were killed Thursday after a boat carrying refugees capsized off the Greek island of Lesbos. Three of those confirmed dead were children. 23 survivors have been rescued separately. Authorities in Turkey say at least nine people died Thursday in a shipwreck off its northern coast. According to UN data, 125 people were killed or went missing last year as they undertook the perilous maritime journey between Turkey and nearby Greek islands in the Aegean Sea. In Washington, D.C., President Trump fired at least six National Security Council staffers after an Oval Office meeting Wednesday with the far-right activist Laura Loomer. The firings came over the objections of National Security Advisor Michael Waltz, who was present at the meeting. And after Loomer reportedly handed Trump a list of people she considered disloyal. Among those ousted was General Timothy Hawk, who led both the National Security Agency and the U.S. Cyber Command. Loomer is a far-right conspiracy theorist, a self-described proud Islamophobe, and a longtime Trump supporter who was previously banned from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for hateful social media posts. The acting inspector general of the Pentagon is launching an investigation into Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's use of a signal group chat to discuss U.S. war plans in Yemen, which accidentally included the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine. The Trump administration warned school and state officials across the country Thursday that federal education funding will be withdrawn unless public schools eliminate all DEI, that's diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The Education Department gave states 10 days to sign and return letters certifying compliance with the order. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, said in a statement, quote, "In the middle of a school year, the president is trying to bully the very same school districts that he insisted just a few weeks ago should be in charge of education. He's wielding a cudgel of billions in federal aid to tens of millions of children to force educators to kowtow to his politics and ideology," Weingarten said. Members of Elon Musk's Doge operation have gained access to a sensitive data system that contains the personal information of unaccompanied immigrant children, including their mental health records and reports of abuse. The data portal is run by the Department of Health and Human Services, which takes custody of unaccompanied children. Many agencies contracted by HHS to provide housing and other care have been accused of neglect and abuse, including sexual assault. The data breach comes after DOGE made massive cuts to a watchdog agency within HHS that oversees the facilities where immigrant children are held. DOGE staffers were also granted access to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services data systems. Illinois Congress member Delia Ramirez, who is the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants, said in a statement, quote, "They've ordered the abduction of immigrant activists, the erratic cancellation of visas, the use of infamous offshore mega prisons, and the violation of due process. It's deplorable that the sensitive information of temporary protected status, DACA applicants and recipients, visa holders, and naturalized individuals would be used to violate their rights," unquote. In Washington State, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents raided a roofing company in Bellingham County early Wednesday, arresting at least 37 immigrant workers. Witnesses say the agents showed up in unmarked vehicles. Workers were rounded up and processed in a warehouse on site before being loaded onto buses. The group's now being held at the troubled Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, where farm worker labor organizer Alfredo Lelo Juarez has also been jailed since last week. We'll have more on Lelo later in the broadcast. The Senate's confirmed Dr. Mehmet Oz to head the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The former TV host and doctor has long supported the privatization of Medicare and Medicaid. The confirmation comes one day after Senate Republicans unveiled a budget blueprint, which includes $4.5 trillion in tax breaks for the wealthy that Republicans would pay for by slashing Medicaid. A federal judge on Thursday temporarily blocked the Department of Health and Human Services from terminating $11 billion in federal health funding that was allocated to states during the COVID-19 pandemic. Judge Mary McElroy sided with the 23 Democratic states in the District of Columbia, which argued the withdrawal of funding would create chaos and threaten the delivery of life-saving care. And parts of the central United States are bracing for potentially historic flooding after roughly 100 tornadoes hit the region Wednesday. At least 7 people were killed in Tennessee, Missouri, and Indiana as homes and, in some cases, entire neighborhoods were flattened. Severe weather alerts were also issued in the state of Arkansas, Illinois, Mississippi, and Kentucky, where Governor Andy Beshear warned residents Wednesday of more life-threatening conditions.
When we have this much rain, it's the decisions about when to get out, about what to drive through, when to go stay with someone else that can be the difference between life and death.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments Wednesday in a case brought by South Carolina to expel Planned Parenthood clinics from its state Medicaid program, even though states are largely already prohibited from using Medicaid to fund abortions. Planned Parenthood says the move violates the Medicaid Act's free choice of provider provision. Under the Medicaid law, patients are entitled to choose their own doctors. In South Carolina, that includes Planned Parenthood South Atlantic, which provides low-income patients with a range of services, including cancer screenings and full physical exams. This is Planned Parenthood South Atlantic's lawyer, Nicole Saharsky, during Wednesday's Supreme Court oral arguments.
It says that there's any individual may obtain care from any qualified and willing provider. So it's the combination of any individual may obtain care from any qualified and willing provider. It disables the state from doing something the state might otherwise want to do. Like we want to take this provider out of Medicaid for a reason that's unrelated to medical qualifications, which is what the state is doing here.
South Carolina, which is being represented by the Christian legal group Alliance Defending Freedom, argues that the Medicaid statute does not mention the word right or its functional equivalent, and therefore individuals have no right to sue to enforce the choice of doctor provision. This is Justice Elena Kagan questioning lawyer John Bursch, representing South Carolina during Wednesday's oral arguments.
You agree that the state has an obligation here, is that correct?
To provide benefits on the plan, but significantly
the state has an obligation to provide this particular thing, right, which is the state has an obligation to ensure that a person, I don't even know how to say this line without saying right, has a right to choose their doctor. That's what this provision is. It's impossible to even say the thing without using the word right. Has a benefit to choose their doctor? The state has to ensure that individuals have a benefit to choose their doctor. The state has to ensure that individuals have a right to choose their doctor. That's what this provision is.
Well, that language that you're focused on, may obtain, is not clear rights-creating language for four reasons.
I don't want four reasons. I want you to answer my question. The obligation is to ensure that individuals can choose their doctor.
Outside the Supreme Court Wednesday, both pro- and anti-abortion protesters held rallies as the justices inside considered South Carolina's bid to remove Planned Parenthood clinics from state Medicaid programs. For more, we're joined by Alexis McGill-Johnson, president and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Alexis, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you talk about what struck you most about Wednesday's oral arguments and what they indicate, the direction the justices were going?
Well, good morning, Amy. It's wonderful to be here. You know, look, I think that inside the court, the clip that you showed of Justice Kagan, I think laid bare how valuable it is once again to have these critically thoughtful female liberal justices asking the plain questions around what is a state's obligation to ensure non-discrimination and the provision of dignity for every patient around a federal program, a federal insurance program like Medicaid. I cannot read the tea leaves of the court, but I can tell you that I do believe that South Carolina had a hard time trying to prove that it had a right to take away the dignity of patients who choose to go to Planned Parenthood. And that's ultimately what this case is about. It is about whether or not Governor McMaster and his political agenda to try to take Planned Parenthood down in South Carolina really was in violation of what Congress intended when they set forth the Medicaid program and allowed patients to be able to have a free choice of their provider, right? And let's also think about why Congress did that, because states have been denying patients the right to do that. So I thought it was a very compelling conversation inside of the court, and I think it was made more so by the fine arguing of Nicole Saharsky, but also from those justices who really, really made it clear that the right to choose your own provider is just a matter of dignity.
And let's talk about even the state of reproductive care in South Carolina already. Almost 40% of South Carolina counties are believed to be contraceptive deserts. Can you talk about what kind of access, especially but not limited to low-income people who need that care?
Look, this is a story that we see all throughout the South right now, with so many of these states that have enacted these egregious abortion bans already had maternal care deserts. They had deserts where very few counties even have practicing OBGYNs. And the result of that is that you end up with contraceptive deserts. You end up with maternal care deserts. You end up with labor and delivery wards closing precisely because many providers do not want to stay in a state where they may be criminalized or fined for providing the care to the best of their ability to their patients. You know, Planned Parenthood is a health system that literally sits in the middle of the public health system and tries to strengthen it. Many patients that come to Planned Parenthood, we are the first point of entry into the healthcare system broadly. And the fact that Governor McMaster would want to deny patients access to care when, you know, many times we are the only safety net, the safety net of the safety net, they're providing care, just seems completely bonkers to us.
And talk about what that care is. It goes way beyond abortion.
Oh, of course it goes way beyond abortion. It is STI testing. It is access to contraception, wellness exams, breast cancer screenings, gender affirming care, you know, everything that someone would need to live a full and free, sexually healthy life. And I think that, you know, again, in many cases, it is there's primary care being provided in Planned Parenthood health centers. It is just basic health care. And to have a state try to deny that is what this case is about, using levers like Medicaid.
Already South Carolina bans abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy?
Correct.
Can you talk about Texas? In 2021, Texas terminated Planned Parenthood from its state Medicaid program. Talk about this precedent and also what it means if the conservative majority Supreme Court rules in favor of South Carolina.
Yes. So, you know, look, we have states that have, you know, taken various measures to attack Planned Parenthood and remove us from, you know, their state Medicaid system. And the impact of that, again, is, you know, is on the patients, right? This isn't about Planned Parenthood. This is about whether or not the patients have the right to use their health insurance in order to get access to the care of their choice, of their choosing from their provider. You know, what will happen if the Supreme Court decides to rule in favor of South Carolina is that more states will act like South Carolina and Texas. Many of those states that have enacted the most restrictive abortion bans will very likely try to remove Planned Parenthood from its ability to or patients' ability to use Medicaid to go to Planned Parenthood. So it can have very devastating consequence on the patients throughout those states and their ability to get high quality care that we believe they deserve.
And can you explain what the powerhouse Christian legal group Alliance Defending Freedom is? This is the group that brought the case against Planned Parenthood in South Carolina.
Yes. So this is, you know, a group that should be no surprise was incorporated in Amarillo, Texas, so that anytime they can bring a lawsuit, they can go directly to Judge Kaczmarek, who is the only federal judge in the Northern District of Texas, a very friendly anti-abortion judge that, you know, has clearly opened his court to these kinds of cases and supporting them. We are before that court right now on a false claims case, a meritless case where not only has Texas kicked Planned Parenthood affiliates out of the Medicaid program there, they are also suing to recoup resources back to the state. For all of the other services that have been provided in a bogus lawsuit that is intended to try to bankrupt Planned Parenthood. And I think that, you know, we are watching just a patchwork of, you know, very Christian nationalists and anti-abortion organizations work with this, you know, new structural advantage that they have, both with the administration as it currently stands, the Supreme Court, and the kind of patchwork of a judicial system that has, you know, been co-opted by right-wing judges.
The Trump administration's withholding tens of millions of dollars from nine Planned Parenthood state affiliates that provide contraceptives and other vital reproductive care predominantly to low-income and people of color. The providers received notices this week stating their Title X funding was being temporarily retained due to possible violations, they said, of Trump's policies against DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Health and Human Services has given the providers, which operate dozens of clinics nationwide, including in Indiana and Kentucky, 10 days to comply with Trump's demands to eliminate DEI initiatives. In a letter, HHS pointed to mission statements and other public documents that highlight the clinic's commitment to Black communities as supposed evidence of their noncompliance. Alexis McGill-Johnson, you're the CEO of Planned Parenthood. Your response?
I'm a CEO of Planned Parenthood. I am a Black woman. I am a, you know, someone who cares deeply about reducing disparities in healthcare in communities, as we all should. I can't think of any American who would believe that the color of your skin should dictate what kind of care you get. And that is what Planned Parenthood stands for. No matter who you are, no matter where you live, no matter what your zip code is, no matter how you identify, no matter your documentation status, we are there to serve you and ensure that you get high quality, time sensitive care. And so I think about the work that Planned Parenthood providers do every day, the way they are able to leverage a critically important longstanding program like Title X to fund access to contraception and support communities. And the idea that the Trump administration would take those resources away or attempt to spend those resources because Planned Parenthood is committed to improving health outcomes in community. That is essentially what they are saying. What they are not saying is that this is, you know, just another one of the dozens of attacks that Planned Parenthood is facing as, you know, people who want to use any means that they have to deny access and resources to Planned Parenthood because they are trying to advance their anti-abortion agenda.
So are you sticking with DEI at these clinics or the clinics?
You know, each affiliate is going to make their decisions about how they enact improvements to health outcomes. But at our core, right, at our core, reducing disparities, health disparities in community is what we do. And I think that's really important for us to move away from, you know, just these, you know, trigger words like DEI and actually talk about what those words mean and what they mean in practice for a community, right? Ensuring we have representation of everyone so that, you know, we have people who speak the same languages as our patients so that we can give them the best care, that we have, you know, an ability to improve outcomes and ensure that people are getting the right resources to do so. And that, you know, everyone is actually seen, not just seen by a doctor, but literally seen for who they are and what they want. That is what I have in my healthcare system I go to. I know when I walk into my provider, they know who I am. They are able to, you know, see me and understand my particular needs. And I think everyone in America deserves that. And I can't imagine that this administration will be very popular in trying to deny other Americans that same right.
And finally, we just have a minute, but with Planned Parenthood under assault, you've also had a lot of victories. Among them, in Wisconsin, Judge Susan Crawford, who once represented Planned Parenthood as an attorney, trounced the Brad Schimmel, the judge who was funded by, among others, the richest man in the world, Elon Musk. The significance of this and other victories that you consider so important at this very fraught time.
Oh, Wisconsin was such a shot in the arm, I think, for this movement, for so many movements, because I think what it shows is that the good people of Wisconsin, the good people of America, do not want to be bought. They want to do what is right. They want the ability to make decisions, to continue to vote for freedom, and to ensure that their representation reflects that in their state. And I think, you know, all of us looking to Wisconsin, you know, have a lot of hope about what is possible right now as we fight back with this administration. You know, I also think, I mean, and the practical implications of that, right? We have a state that is, you know, voted in support of reproductive freedom, and to have a state Supreme Court to affirm that is going to be really important. It's also going to be really important as we approach, you know, in 5 years, the year 2030, and we hit a redistricting year, and so that we're able to kind of start to fight back structurally in the space that we are in. I'd also point you to Missouri, Amy. The people of Missouri voted to enshrine, to actually flip a ban, abortion ban in November, and it's only been within the last month that the Missouri clinics have been able to provide access to abortion, because even when you win, in, you still have to defend it with the state AG and the state house that may not be favorable. So that is the work that we have to be reminded of, that even when we win, we have to defend those wins fiercely and remind these electeds what we want and who we are and how powerful we will be to ensure that we get to maintain our freedoms.
Alexis McGill-Johnson, President and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. When we come back, we go to Washington State, where ICE agents pulled over the car of a beloved immigrant farm worker organizer, Lalo Alfredo Juarez, smashed his car window when he asked for a warrant and hauled him away. We'll speak to one of his closest friends. Stay with us.
As a new river flow in the night, and somewhere, honey, some old hog stomping on the bog, like a free